Hello, listeners. This is producer John. Open Pike Night is going to be at Trek Long Island 2024. From May 31st to June 2nd, Cameron and myself, producer John, will be in the Big Apple living long and prospering. We'll be hosting a panel. We'll be giving out stickers. We will have our microphones. Be sure to follow Open Pike on social media and subscribe to openpike.substack.com because we also will be giving away some Trek Long Island weekend passes. Trek Long Island is May 31st to June 2nd at the Hyatt Regency in Hopog, New York.
This is Henry Alonzo Myers, and you are listening to Open Pike Night.
This is Akiva Goldsman, and you're listening to Open Pike Night. Keep listening.
Is this thing on? Hello, hello. Welcome to Open Pike Night, the Strange New World podcast where your personal logs are the prime directive. I'm your host, John T. Bolds, here tonight with some amazing guests on stage and in the studio for our Strange New World Season 2 showrunner retrospective. You've heard our thoughts about Season 2. Tonight we hear from the guys who know more about it than anyone. With me tonight are my co-hosts. The man who says, to be continued, and runs away whenever an awkward conversation starts. Host of Sudden But Inevitable, Jesse.
I gotta ask, producer John, are you feeling like your job is threatened? Because usually you run our show, and now, I mean...
Hey, if these guys will take over running the podcast, I'm not gonna say no. And the man who would fly his shuttle way too close to Starbase 1 just because it looks cool. Host of Green Shirt, a newbie struck through TNG, Cameron.
Yes, everything I know about life I did learn from Top Gun. It's a wonder I'm not in jail yet.
All right. Joining us tonight are two people who have some of the coolest jobs in entertainment. Guys with so much decision-making power that millions of fans talk about the worlds they help create. And our Open Pike Night callers have something to say.
I just wanted to add my voice to what I'm sure are many callers thanking Henry and Akiva, not just for taking the time to do this pod, but also, of course, for Strange New Worlds.
First of all, thank you so much for all that you have done for Star Trek in this era.
Thanks for the last two seasons of amazing entertainment.
Just thank you for an awesome season. There were so many standout episodes. I loved what you did with Una and the courtroom drama, the homages to TOS and TNG in that.
And congratulations on a banger of the second season. What I really enjoyed about the second season of Strange New Worlds is that there was so much experimentation with the storytelling.
Henry, Akiva, calling you guys by your first names is weird and feels wrong. I love your work.
I was very nervous when the show came out, but the way you've incorporated Strange New Worlds with what had already existed in TOS, although fearful, has been just really spectacular.
I've been a Trek fan my whole life, pretty much, and I love a lot of the franchise, but I've always been a TOS guy at heart, and I think you're just doing a fantastic job honoring that old school original vibe while still helping the franchise grow and go in these exciting new directions, which obviously is also very important.
And the Lower Decks crossover, I don't know how you pulled that off, but it was phenomenal.
It was all very well done.
Thanks again for all the work. Thanks to everyone involved in this show. It's such a pleasure to watch each week. I really appreciate it and look forward to more.
What you're doing, particularly with Uhura and Chapel, I want to see more. I love TOS. I grew up with it, so I hope to see more of that.
It is glorious and joyous, and I hope it continues for both of you and for all of us for much, much longer.
May the strikes be resolved amicably. And we get 20 more.
And oh my goodness, the showrunners! Thanks so much for being on the podcast.
All right, returning guest Henry Alonzo Myers and first-time guest Akiva Goldsman, welcome to Open Pike Night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Very impressive that Henry did all those voices just now.
I was thinking the same thing. He's a talent.
I've never heard your British be quite that convincing, Henry.
So I've been working on it.
Okay.
Thank you.
I can tell this is going to be a fun conversation.
Oh, no, I got to go. But thank you.
Still counts. All right.
Well, yeah, let's just let's set the game board here, gentlemen. So you finish filming season one, and not too long after that, season two is announced. Now, at that point, when it was announced, like, what did you have in mind? What were your goals? You must have had some ideas of what you were saving up for season two. Like, what was the analogous form of season two at that point?
It ended up coming very fast. So, like, we almost didn't really get a break. We were, like, jump from one to the next. I mean, the words that we came up with were essentially, like, we want to do the same thing, but we want to do it bigger, and we want to do it better, and we want to try some things that we hadn't tried. That was sort of it. We didn't want to change the show, but we wanted to, like, you know, we were trying to do a classic version of Star Trek, but in a contemporary way. And we wanted to do all that. And, you know, season one, I want to say there were some episodes we probably tried to do a little more reduced because we were literally just trying to figure out how to make the show. And then we were like, all right, now that we've figured out how to make the show, let's see how we can make the show, but a little more complicated. And we pushed ourselves. And that definitely was what season two was about.
Excellent.
You agree with that, Akiva?
No, I was drunk.
But even when drunk, is the writing on a piece of paper is actually very coherent. So
very. As long as you only use three or four letters, you can write almost anything when drunk.
They're usually the correct letters. That's
No, I know what Henry said, and said it well.
Were there any episodes or plots that you had kind of saved over that you knew you were going to hit? Was the crossover, the musical in your minds at that point, or did those all come later?
Well, I was agitating for a musical from the beginning, but because I had never actually done a musical, so it's incredibly easy to pitch a thing that you have no idea is as challenging as it is. Henry, of course, had done many musicals before and kept saying, slow the fuck down. And he was right. And we did. But no, typically, short of that, the sad truth is, you know, we have more cool stories than we can tell in 10 episodes. We sort of, it's the very first thing we do is we sort of put up cards that are kind of, you know, it's like Friends, the one where, you know, we're always doing sort of the things we all wished we could make episodes about, and the wall fills up and then we start throwing them away. And unfortunately, there's always about 15 to 20. And then we play Survivor. And it is just the nature of the beast so far that for the most part, when we start again the following year, it all begins again. And mostly you don't carry it over. So those that didn't make it off the island, whatever happens on the island in Survivor, don't get to come back the next season. Or there's an interesting creative pile of detritus where there are, you know, Harry Mudd is crawling on top of Kirk's ghost.
All right. We got some great callers, and we're going to start with Mariah.
Hi, Open Pike Night. It's Mariah. I really connect with and appreciate La'an and the, like, very real portrayal of somebody dealing with trauma and trying to figure out how to be an open, connected person in the world when it's, like, really hard and scary. And I just really appreciate the care that's gone into that character and the fact that, like, in some ways she really led a lot of season two. And I was delighted to have La'an and Uhura and Chapel get such strong storylines this season. So thank you. Live long and prosper.
Thank you. You have a great radio voice.
She has an excellent radio voice. Yeah.
We've always said that.
Yeah. The first time she called in, we're like, man, we should have her host this.
By the way, she would be better at it than you guys. I'm not saying that in a way that's bad. I'm just truth speaking.
I'm pretty sure she is a radio host. So,
yeah.
Was there a conscious choice to have La'an be more center stage in this season, or was that kind of an organic thing that happened throughout the process of writing the episodes?
you know, Henry's the good one, I'm the bad one, right? Like, Henry will give you light and love, and I will give you, like, suffering and pain, which is why we're...
I'm starting to get that.
Yeah, it's why we're good mom and dad.
But the one thing we agree on is the romance.
Well, that's true. We do like the romance. That's true, we do, because that's both light and joy and horror and pain. Bringing a traumatized character into Star Trek as part of the palette... was very much on purpose. It's built into the pilot. We sort of saw her as, a new lens on life in the Federation, and also that thing that we have talked about a bunch when we talk about the Gorn, which is, you know, just because we live in a world where aspirationally there's a tremendous amount of empathy being generated, both in terms of our making the show and its messaging, but also within the construct of the Federation, we still don't think that precludes there being real evil in the galaxy. And real evil has real traumatic effect, and trauma has effect on human beings, and healing is required, not just today, but at least as far as Henry and I are concerned, also in the future.
With the beginning of season two, it was noted by pretty much everybody watching our callers us that there wasn't a lot of Captain Pike actually on screen. The captain of the Enterprise wasn't around. Was this like mainly due to the fact that Anson had just had a brand new child and was focusing on trying to get a little bit of sleep every now and then? Or was it some of it pre-planned?
It was entirely about scheduling.
Yeah.
We wanted to do something that, in general, we always want to make the show about as many of our characters as possible. The only reason that we went light for him at the beginning was just because we wanted to make sure that he had the energy to come back, because he wasn't sleeping a lot and was doing all the hard work of being a dad. And we didn't want that to affect his work. So we were trying to cut him a little bit of slack. It was not because we wanted any less of him. We probably wanted more.
It was because he had a baby, and it was pre-planned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it works out really nicely. I mean, we get our first, dad's away, let's steal the car and go on a joyride episode. Like, a great way to start a season.
And the scenes he does have in episode two are glorious.
Yeah. All right. Let's hear from our next caller. Here is Alpha Talking.
Hello. This is at Alpha Talking. Once again, you're TOS Canon Captain speaking. I feel like a professional ice skater that's skating on a frozen lake and enjoying it every time, just like every episode I look forward to and enjoy and watch of Strange New Worlds. Yet I am fearful, and I can almost hear the ice cracking, even as I skate across, wind in my hair, and enjoy every moment of this show. So my question for the showrunners are, how much of the writer's room discusses TOS canon before creating each and every episode of Strange New Worlds? Or is it just simply a story over canon? Canon matters a little, or no, we're going to do everything we can to try to line up everything with TOS canon. Trust us. But wonderful job. Best Star Trek that's out there right now. This last season was spectacular. I loved every minute of it. Thank you all again, and thank you for the time.
All right. So I'm sure you guys have never been asked this question before, right? About where TOS and Strange New Worlds meet.
Starting to feel like canons, yeah. I'm sure. Aimed right at you.
This is a thing that Akiva has been working against for many years, or with and through, on multiple shows. So I want to say I'm relatively new to this in the grand scheme of things, but I love canon, and so does Akiva. and we talk about it a lot when we have some very, very smart canon people in our staff.
I personally am a TOS fan, right? I'm old, so that's my Star Trek. And canon matters a lot to me, and I know it well. And then there are people around me who know it far better, but I could probably win, any bar trivia game with civvies and, maybe a few pros. So
100%.
It matters. It matters to us a lot, but it doesn't matter so much that we will not chase something that we think can be very useful for our show. We will body English around it. We will try to bat our eyes and smoke and mirror our ways through it. On occasion, all the new shows run up against it or tread heavily on it. I will say that the one thing that we changed, and I don't consider it canon, but I'm happy to have this fight with anybody. We shifted the dates of the Eugenics War and World War III. And this is because I believe fundamentally that Star Trek is aspirational. I don't think it happens in another Earth's future. I think it wants to happen in our Earth's future. And when the show was made, those dates were the future. They're now the past. And so we slid them forward, and we will continue to do that as long as we get to make it, in order to let the Federation be something that we can all imagine ourselves into as what happens to our Earth one day when we get our shit together.
We do apply a lot of time travel logic, though, to explain why things move around. We don't, you know, we are not saying that we're getting rid of what happened. We're saying that things change as you change time travel.
If Terminator can do it, Star Trek can do it.
Exactly. It's like this isn't the first time we've seen this done, and it works. So, yeah.
So, Akiva, we did hear that you are a big TOS guy from Henry the last time that he was here. So I have to ask if you could pick like one or two episodes that of TOS that you think everybody has to watch. What would they be?
I think it's always Sitting on the edge of Forever, right? I mean, I think that we, I think we get to sort of have an episode that works profoundly for both people who understand Star Trek and people who don't. You know, I think it does all the things that Star Trek does well. It's a lens on our world. It's a comment on our suppositions about good and evil, right and wrong. It's real human drama. It's compelling. It's deeply emotional. It's really smart. And it's cool, you know? So I love City for all those reasons. And also because my first Star Trek convention was 1976, which really dated me. And we only saw them on television in those days on WPIX Channel 11 every evening at 6 in syndication. And
which is where I actually watched it, interestingly enough. That was my...
And it was the first time I ever saw it projected. And the colors were so different from what was on that Panasonic sort of color TV in my living room. So that was, it's seared into my consciousness, you know. And then I love the menagerie, both parts, because we didn't have the cage, so, and that came much later for my generation, and I'm partial to Where No Man Has Gone Before, just because it has all these interesting promises in it, some of which are fulfilled, some of which aren't, but which sort of sat in my imagination for such a long time. So that's probably, I know that wasn't two, it was three or technically four, but there you have it.
did you know that we, the fans, would see, when we saw the trailer, would see the portal from Those Old Scientists, and everyone just assumed they were so smart that it was the Guardian of Forever? Like, was that a pre-planned rug pull?
No, look, I think that Discovery, long after I was there, but Discovery sort of decided to do some other things with the Guardian. So we sort of, we let them have that. Mm-hmm. I mean, by the way, there's a more traditional Guardian in... When Sonequa is going she's sort of having a round robin of seeing the galaxy at the end of Context is for Kings. There's actually a more traditional Guardian shot in there. But otherwise, the Guardian has sort of, I think, at least currently been handed over to a different set of creators. So we haven't taken it back. I guess we could.
We just needed to give it a little space. It was less important to the show than us merging. We were already merging two shows. We didn't want to add a third to try to. It seemed complicated.
Yeah, that's a season three technique. Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah. Let's hear from our next caller. Here is Josh Reeve on the Open Pike Night stage.
Hello, Open Pike. Hello, Henry and Akiva. When you have characters such as you do in Strange New Worlds, like Lana Ortegas, who have no previous story in Star Trek. And then we introduce them into characters that do, and we know where their circle kind of ends and is going. Spock, the Kirks, Uhura. Can you talk a little bit about why it's equally important to develop those legacy stories now, even though we kind of know where they're going, just as it is to develop the new character stories, and what kind of stagnation kind of happens when we just focus on what we don't know and then kind of just meander through what we do? Also, on a personal note, someone whose name may or may not rhyme with Shmashua Shmeev may have started a rumor that Pike was the one that started and came up with Enterprise Bingo. Would you confirm, deny, or possibly give your thoughts on that? Please and thank you.
Over to you, Henry.
I feel like I have a pretty boring and normal answer to this, which is to say we have the fun of coming up with like unknown stories about the people you haven't met before. And then we have the fun of trying to tell stories about people who, you know, their future, but they don't know their future. Hmm. We really think about the present as they think about the present, which is how human beings think about the present, which is to say, I don't know what I'm doing tonight. You know, I know I have, you know, a movie ticket or I'm supposed to meet a friend or whatever, but like, I don't genuinely know what's going to happen. And that's how you have to approach these characters. You can't approach them thinking about who they will be in 5, 7, 20 years. Like it's just not how you live your life. With the rare exception of Pike, who has this, you know, surprise future knowledge. So, I mean, that's how we approach it. Like, I think we're trying to give something to our actors so that they can play it. Like, that's really the thing. Cause like, this is our job as writers, is we try to come up with something that we think is cool. And then we try to hand it to actors who are going to make it great. But in order for us to make it great, we have to give them something to experience on screen. And the experience usually means they don't know the feeling they're going to go through. They don't know the thing that is going to happen to them. They are not yet the person who they will be later. Hmm. So we just don't think about it that way. That's usually the approach that we bring.
What about Enterprise Bingo?
Oh, Enterprise Bingo?
Who started it?
Who started it in our room, or who started
it in the universe?
Brett. Yeah. Well, let's do both.
No, it predates Pike.
Yeah.
I think it's
that's Archer.
It's an old classic one, and no one is quite sure who to take, you know, who will take credit for it. But you know, there's a lot of people who think wrongly about, oh, it came from him. No, it came from her. No, it came from that. Okay.
Nice.
I'm gonna go with Trip. Yeah.
Trip, yeah. Well, speaking of future knowledge, we kind of realized that those old scientists gave you an opportunity to lay some clues and Easter eggs and seeds, because these characters, Boimler and Mariner, know these characters' history, both what we know, the audience, but also what we don't know. Did you plant any clues for what might be coming up for these characters in Episode 7? And are you allowed to say?
For Boimler or for our people?
For the Strange New Worlds crew. We're like, for example, we were theorizing maybe when he says Ortegas is a war hero, he's not talking about the Klingon War. Maybe there's another war she's going to be a part of.
Well, in that one, we were specifically talking about the Klingon War because we're literally diving into it in the next episode, which isn't to say that we're not going to be continuing to deal with some issues from that.
Okay, good.
There's a ton of references in that episode. That was the intent. You know, we wanted to, it's a little bit of a, when we initially started talking about that episode, the thought was, what if the biggest Star Trek fan in the world landed on the Enterprise? That was part of what we were trying to do. So that was a little bit for everybody.
So no seeds for what might happen in season 3 is what you're saying?
I will not reveal anything about season 3. No.
All right.
Fair. There's a season 3?
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Henry, the last time you were here, you spoke with us about how writing involves a lot of listening to your characters and the stories that they need to tell. Was there anything you heard from your characters while writing season 2 that surprised you?
I was surprised that so many people were able to sing. That was a thing that was I don't want to say it's a surprise, but it was a delightful surprise. That's a good question. I mean, the thing that we usually do when we approach is we try not to dig in the exact same direction that we dug the previous season. You know, going into this season was about, all right, well, we already did the stuff with Lon. We already did the stuff with Uhura. We already did the stuff with Ortegas. Like, what are we going to do differently this season? How are we going to send them in another direction? We're really trying hard not to just play the same note. And that really is about working with the actors. And so a lot of this is about what's the story that we can give them that allows them to do a thing that either reveals some new thing about their story or has them try something. You know, I mean, there's the Lon romance, which I adore, is a thing that we didn't get to do season one with her.
Hmm. Did you know how powerful her performance would be when she broke down at the end of season or episode 3?
Suspected. She's a very good actor.
Yes, I know. I know. I'm just saying, like, we were all gobsmacked. Like, it's such a great moment of.
We didn't even know that. I mean, when the concept of that story came up, we didn't even plan necessarily to kill him. Oh. It just came out of the storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
It suddenly seemed like, maybe what if we did that? And then it suddenly we had a story that meant something to her and it was her. I mean, yeah, that tear gets me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And there were people who were like upset with like, oh, you killed Jim Kirk. It's like, join the club. Have you seen Star Trek?
I mean, my partner and I love things that make you cry. That's all I'll say.
This season was great at that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Our next caller is Platty, who's been on almost every episode this season of Open Pike Night. Here we go.
Hey, Open Pike Night, Akiva and Henry. This is Platty M3 calling in with my hits, shits, and misses. So, season 2 hits. I have a question for you. What scenes or characters did you find that hit the exact tone and fan reaction that you were going for? Shits. Conversely, anything that seemed like you thought it might go over better, but maybe didn't, either through filming or fan reaction. And misses, with season 2 filming before season 1 aired, is there anything that you didn't get to put in that in retrospect you'd have liked to have done? Maybe based on fan reaction to season 1, wish maybe you had a little tweak for season 2? Akiva and Henry, I love what you've done with the show. It's been my favorite live-action Trek in decades. So keep up the good work, and I look forward to seeing what you do with season 3.
Yeah, so were there any standout moments where you're like, yes, that's exactly how we wanted the fans to react to this?
Well, I think of the I'm Ortegas and I Fly the Ship is one of my, that's one of my favorite moments in the season. Because, frankly, we just wanted to write more for her, and we don't always have time to write as much for everyone as we want. And so that was a delight.
Absolutely a hit.
Yeah.
How about things you created that just didn't ring with the audience or didn't get the reception you were hoping for?
I'm going to say something. I don't want to speak for my partner, but I will say my own personal feeling about this, and I really don't mean this to be rude, is I actually genuinely don't care. I genuinely don't care how people react. That's their reaction. They are entitled to have it. They can do what they want. We were making a show that we liked. We were focusing a show on things that we would enjoy. And we didn't have a lot of that coming into it. Everything was already decided long before things got on the air. So because we were trying to make a show we thought was cool. You know?
This is real. It's important. And I agree with Henry entirely, which is, we're thrilled that people like the show. It keeps us going, and we are grateful to the fans, and we can't possibly make a show based on fan response. That would be a counterintuitive and not particularly creative. So, you know, Henry and I are real Star Trek fans ourselves, right? And we just happen to be the Star Trek fans that this week get to make Star Trek. And there are a bunch of other Star Trek fans who get to make Star Trek. And after we're gone, hopefully there will be many other Star Trek fans who get to make Star Trek. And I think what you try to do at that moment is make Star Trek for the fan that's inside of you. You know, I was, 12 and 13 years old at, that Star Trek convention. And I wanted to play Star Trek. I wanted to make up Star Trek stories. I was able to find some solace in watching that show in a way that I couldn't find in the real world. Not to say that Star Trek isn't the real world, of course. And so now I get to, in concert with a bunch of other folks who are some version of me, make a show that we want to see and that excites us and that welcomes us and people like us. And that's our job. And that's a great job. If it doesn't welcome enough people over time, you know, someone else will do it. And there are a lot of different Star Treks inside Star Trek. So what we're doing is chasing the one that we love.
Well, yeah, let's just talk about one or two fans then. On a personal level, looking back, was there anything you wish you could have maybe spent more time on or anything like that on a, you know, personally when you watch it?
My only disappointments were, I think, about scheduling. There were a couple of, and I'm not going to go into specifics, but there were a couple of characters who I wish we could have brought in that we just couldn't organize it.
That's fair.
That was hard. You know, it's, I think the hardest part is that, I mean, I don't want to, this is not a slight because it's very hard to do 10 episodes. It takes us like, you know, 18 months or so. But we probably could have done 13 and filled more. We probably could have done 20 and filled more because there are a lot of, there's always a Trek show that we wanted to touch on that we weren't able to.
Yeah. We leave a lot of stuff on the table, and that's what I was saying earlier. And, you know, and that's a bummer. I mean, I'd definitely like there to be 13 or 20. I would love for there to be an opportunity to do like that musical for me, which is just endlessly delightful. You know, could have been 2 hours. You know, it could have been a full, honest 2-hour movie. You know, we don't have that latitude. We have a bunch of latitude, but we don't have that latitude. But that's less a regret and more a pie in the sky dream.
Yeah. I mean, around here, I think our kind of only consistent criticism of season two is we wanted more. I mean,
honestly, we probably share that with you. You know, we feel a little bit like, but wait, give us just give us 4 more hours. And we can really be a little more fulsome about all of it.
Interesting. Any chance that might happen in the future? Speculating?
We've certainly asked each time, and each time we've been told that we should go back to our rich.
Well, keep asking for us, for the fans, and for yourselves.
Yeah, let us know what weird thing we can mail to the studio to fill up their mailboxes.
This feels like a dangerous line of question.
All right. I think the fact that all of you are watching the show is certainly enough.
We can keep doing that.
Oh, yeah. We do keep doing that. Our next caller is actually a write-in because, well, caller doesn't have a mouth. It's Captain Pike's Hair writing in. We haven't heard from them in a while. I want to give my special thanks to the creators Akiva and Henry. Thank you for raising the bar on our series by taking it and me to new heights. My growing popularity is a cut above the rest as my fans are all abuzz about me. Damn it. As a permanent addition to the series, it is truly the highlight of each week for me. I've looked forward to this part ever since my days in the Starfleet root camp with my captain. We are a match pomade in heaven. A quick shout out to my stylist, Daniel Losco, who takes no shortcuts to me at peak perfection. Every visit is sheer amazement. Thank you all for being my heroes, not heroes, and I'll always be hair for you.
Well delivered, John.
Thank you.
That's literally the worst thing that's ever happened. I mean, we're getting punny?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. You're on open pike night.
Yeah.
I was not prepared. I should have been. Fair point. I'll try it again.
All right. Well, speaking of iconic hair, and you've touched on this a bit, but we are the official Mortegas podcast, so we have to ask. You know, I haven't timed her screen presence or counted her lines, but I think it's fair to say she's the only main character who hasn't had a multi-episode arc. So why not Mortegas? Was she intentionally left as a blank canvas, or is that just kind of the way the stories and the writing fell?
I mean, it was always easy to write for her because she is right in the center of like most of the main storylines, and she's right there. There's always great lines for her in there, so that made it really easy. You know, we made an effort to try to give her a bit more in season two. I assure you, we love her, and we want to bring, we want to do more for her. But we feel that way about it. We work to be good parents for all of the people on the show, and we want everyone to get time. Mm-hmm. All I can say is I assure you there will be more for everybody.
Okay, we'll take it. I mean, it's probably also fair to say that the reason we want more Tagus is because she is a bit of a mystery. So,
yeah, and
that's something that we both love, and we also, I mean, some of it we want to reveal, and some of it we don't.
Yeah,
cagey as always, Henry.
Yeah, exactly. You're so good at it, and man. We finally got a chance to meet her in person, meet Melissa in person at in Vegas, and we stood in line for 3 hours. So us being the official Mortegas podcast, it is a shared sentiment. She is extremely popular. Didn't wait that long for anybody else while we were there.
She's fantastic. I just went picketing with her in New York. She's great, man.
Yeah.
All right. So she's surviving the Gorn ship is what you're saying. That's what I'm hearing.
You don't want to know what's going to happen.
No, we don't.
No, not at all. Yeah.
I just want to make you laugh uncomfortably.
If she does survive, there will be some great storyline out of it. That's all I'll say.
All right. Here's our next caller, Tessa, returning to the Open Pike Night stage.
All right, here's the deal. I am sick right now, so we are going to see if I can get through this call without having too intense of a coughing fit. I enjoyed this season a lot. I think it was cruel and unusual to end season two with a major cliffhanger involving the well-being of some of my favorite characters. Jesus. I was really looking forward to the Erica and Christine reunion. And honestly, between the you're not the only one who's going to miss her, the she does a better me, and all of the Erica and Christine scenes in both Subspace Rhapsody and Those Old Scientists, I will be spending the next several months praying for something explicitly romantic between them. Because that's my thing, I guess. That's all I have? Shockingly, Godspeed, soldiers. My name is Tessa, and I'm going to go cough up a lung now.
Oh, Tessa.
Jesus Christ, I don't even know what that call was.
No, it was good. And please, tea, chicken soup, something, maybe honey, lemon, and take rest. Jesus, rest.
Yeah.
It's all Henry's fault, the two-parter. I was like, Henry, don't do that. That's not right. Henry, like, he's cruel. I mean, typically I'm cruel, but he turned out to be crueler. And to your other point, well, you know, we are all about, you know, the subtitle of our show is Love Stories in Space. So your thoughts will be duly taken into consideration. That's a mixing of two phrases, but mostly better so you can watch season three should there ever be a season three.
Oh boy. I mean, just that prospect of like, yep, that's how Strange New Worlds ends is...
Shit happens.
Yeah, I mean, Twin Peaks did it. Like, it's been happening to us our whole lives. And
too soon, John. 25 Star Trek years is later, too soon.
Yeah, exactly. Star Trek is pretty notorious for seeing season cliffhangers where the resolutions were just as much of a cliffhanger to the writers when they wrote part one. Did you have a pretty good idea of how part two would go when you were deciding to make it a two-parter, or? Yeah. Was it a blank canvas like back in the
I wrote part one with an absolute idea of how part two was going to go.
You're a good man, Harry.
I also would say that I really wanted to. As a young man, I loved Best of Both Worlds so much. The jump from when we go off of Frank saying fire, I mean, it's just like that was the feeling we wanted to give the audience, which was oh my God, we're good, like things have gotten bigger and crazier and we have to find out what happened. I mean, that was that was all that I really wanted to recreate, which to me is as that's as Star Trek as it gets. You know, any other delays were not intentional.
Yeah.
Well, that episode was the first and only episode we watched for the first time in a room together. And I can say it absolutely was effective for all three of us.
Oh, yeah.
In that moment.
Yeah. Just that slowly dawning realization like, man, how long have we been watching this episode? Because it sure seems like there's a lot that needs to wrap up.
And it's so masterfully done because there's a moment you're like, oh, this is going to be continued. And then you cut to like a wide shot and there's like 10 more seconds of stuff going on. You're like, oh, maybe they are going to resolve it. And then you cut back to like his face and you're like, oh, those SOBs.
The thing that I loved is that one ends with to be continued. And then in the classic Trek tradition, the next one should be the conclusion of our story. Like that's what we really want to do. And now the conclusion.
Our next couple callers, we went ahead and edited together because they pretty much asked the exact same question. So here is Captain Idle and Trev on the Open Pike Night stage.
Hello, Captain Idle from Trek Time here.
Hey, it's Trev, beaming in from Failure to Franchise, the podcast devoted to failed movie franchise starters.
Season 2 saw massive swings with the Lower Decks crossover episode and the musical episode.
After giving us a fantasy episode, you know, comedic farce, a musical, could you maybe talk about any other genres you're eager to possibly tackle in later seasons?
Do you see more creative and experimental episodes going forward?
I know personally I'd love to see a Western episode with Pike going full cowboy.
Will there be a puppet episode?
And I'm also hoping the zombie discussion we heard in the finale was perhaps teasing a full-on zombie episode at some point.
Oh, how about the crew are forced by Trelane to do a stand-up comedy for an expecting audience of pregnant Gorn? Okay, that last one is a bit ridiculous. No one can match Billy Campbell.
I'm sure you don't want to spoil anything that's already set in stone for season 3, but maybe you could just tease some of the types of episodes you'd like to eventually try, even if you have to be a little cagey about it. Ooh, cagey. See what I did there? All right, thanks, guys. And again, just keep up the incredible work.
Thank you very much, guys. We all appreciate you.
That was pretty great. we love strange new genres. So we do not rest. We don't do it. We try not to do it as trickery, right? We try to sort of use genre and character and story to good effect when it comes to meaning. You know, that trying to generate one of the sort of core values that we like to orbit. So now I'm doing it. You know, and that's typically empathy or compassion or unexpected emotional development or surprise and wonder, right? There's sort of these values that are human connection, connection between sentient beings. All these things are sort of the, you know, the core values of Star Trek, we think. And we use genre as a way of shining or seeing those things through a different lens and thereby enhancing them. Genre is, I often said, a carnival mirror. You know, it's created, it enhances a particular aspect of the human condition. So the answer is yes, for sure. Puppets, unclear,
but not no.
Why? But not never. Weirdly, because we have now been asked this question recently. I and Henry, you don't know this yet. I literally, my brain has been spinning on a couple of things that I'm so desperate to talk to you about.
You can use this platform to just, you know, yeah, you guys can talk right now. That's
what I was thinking was. Oh no, I can't. But we definitely have looked in the directions, many of the directions you just listed and more, and we are eager to try different things and use that's the gift of this show, right? That we can hop genre, and in so doing we can refine our storytelling, and that's neat for us. Yes, people still use the word neat apparently, and so yeah, for sure, more different to come.
Was there a moment where you were like, we've done a musical and a cartoon crossover, what do we do now? Or did you always know you had those up your sleeve? Yeah. You've been doing this a while. You're confident.
Well, I don't know if we always knew, but we definitely didn't go, what do we do now? We're like, so now what we should do is.
And here's a decently related question from Joe Dove calling back into Open Pike Night.
Hey, what's up? It's Joe Dove of the Captain's Quadrant. one of the co-hosts, where myself and Aussie Jason and Texas Jason will reminisce about some of the great work that you've done, Akiva Goldsman, in Strange New Worlds and the revitalization of Star Trek. Now, one of our very quick questions will be, what species of aliens do you think could be the new big bad once we go past the Gorn?
Well, I can't tell you because we have already sort of crafted them. In the, wait, there's going to be a season three, you know, that's where we would find that. So no, but thank you.
Can you answer this? Do you enjoy creating your own new species or reinventing species we've seen before that you maybe grew up with?
Both.
Yeah.
Both equally, but with intent. So, you know, again, not to repeat myself, the Gorn are there to be vaguely inexplicable and to have at least when in relation to us a real savagery and darkness, and that is something that, you know, I will always advocate having as part of the palette of our show, because, you know, monsters are real
and can't hack a computer, apparently. So yeah.
they can type, though.
Yeah, yeah. But with big hands, yeah. And a funny head, and also that suit. Yeah.
The Cayuga, yeah, had a really good IT department. Okay.
Yeah. Really good. I mean, amazing.
Why do you assume that they couldn't hack?
Well, maybe they just couldn't find a sticky note somewhere, and yeah.
Has all the passwords written on it. Yeah.
Yeah. All the stuff they've found before. Yeah, that was a very fun moment. Like, oh, all right, now we get to see the next step after the vicious little guys.
So, Akiva, you've had a lot of experience adapting written works to the screen, including your Academy Award-winning work on A Beautiful Mind. Do you think that your previous experience with adaptations helped you in working in an established universe like Star Trek?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a weird truth, which is everything helps, right? The more you do, the more it helps you do more. That was my favorite sentence I've ever said.
That's a t-shirt right there.
Yeah. But yeah, because part of what you're trying to do when you adapt is create within the confines of an emotion that has been kind of generated already on the part of the source material, right? That's what you're really adapting. You're adapting an emotion. You're adapting the feeling of the book. And you're trying to use the pieces of the narrative that you think help convey that feeling best, because you can't possibly take the whole thing and transcribe it, because it would be boring and long. So I think that, you know, for Henry and I, again, because we love Star Trek, we're just trying to sort of replicate the emotions that Star Trek generated in us with the pieces that we think are crucial, and that seem to be effective for a modern audience. So it's collaboration with an object. It's sensitivity and awareness to the thing that exists and how you then work with it to create in someone else the feeling that you had when you first encountered it. Fuck, that's a lot of words. Sorry.
But well, all good. Yeah. Answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You should be a writer.
Yeah.
I know, right? That's what I keep telling Henry. He won't give me a script.
All right. Let's hear from our next. We just got a couple callers left. Here is Unplanned Trek.
Hey guys, it's Isaac from Unplanned Trek. And can I just say, I continue to be impressed by the high caliber of guests you have on your show, and you guys must be really thrilled to have me on the stage this week. That's fantastic. Thanks for having me, guys. Look, I do have a couple of questions for the guys behind the scenes. One is, has there been any talk about getting Prime Lorca into the Strange New Worlds-averse? And my other question is, has there been given any thought to revealing any more of Sarek's secret kids? We all know that famous Falcon saying, Amanda, I've got some news. All right, guys, keep well. Looking forward to keeping up with all the news and stuff that happens in the off-season as we build up to an eventual Season 3. Thanks for everything during Season 2. It's been a blast. Love you guys all the way from Tasmania, Australia. Isaac from Unplanned Trek.
I'm going to answer the first half, and then I'm going to give it to Henry. And the question, the questioner has his son's name. So it's a really interesting question, because that is actually one of the things that ended up in the detritus pile one of the years. Mm. You know, I'm a fan of Jason Isaac. We worked together on Season 1 of Discovery and on a show we just did together. And so and I like him very much, and I think he's really talented and fun to work with. And, you know, and I'm sort of like, Primark is out there somewhere, and, you know, and it's one of those things where you get it kind of stirred up in the room, you know, and you talk about it, and we did. And then finally what happens is some amazing things don't make the cut. And that's literally one of them. So you guys were asking what, that's the kind of thing that unfortunately goes the way of all flesh when you don't have more time.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the most definitive answer anyone's ever had on that question. So yeah. Thank you very much.
That was a much more specific answer than I was expecting. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm always fascinated by, like, yeah, the what didn't make it type stories. What would have the Eric Stoltz Back to the Future been like?
Exactly.
Interesting, different.
Yeah. So Henry, any additional secret Sarek children?
Well, I mean, that there is one that we talked about Season 1 that we saw a little bit of that we tried to find his pace in Season 2 and could not.
Hmm.
So that was definitely something that came up. And it wasn't because we disliked it. We liked it very much. Well, otherwise, why would we have put it in?
Right. Would have been in a 13 episode season.
Yeah. If we had more time on the screen, we would have spent some time around that, but we didn't. So I can't speak to the future. That's the only thing I can't do.
I think something came up which is worth saying, because I think it's interesting, right, that like in that sort of whimsical, hey, what about Primark and what about more Sarek's children, I bet you would find, and obviously we're the problem with this because we're so sort of Dr. Caligari's cabinet of, you know, we're closed, right? But I bet you would find that if we sat around and you sort of listed off the things that you would imagine would be fun episodes, the Venn diagram of how many of those we have discussed would probably be very large. Like, you know, like we're all kind of the same communal imagining here. You know, we're all sort of like, well, wouldn't it be great if, and there are a bunch of them that are such low hanging fruit. And then you're like, well, we can't. Because we can't get that, or well, we could, or like, but so I bet you, and again, now I'm being coy again, and so I'm an asshole, but like, but I bet you would find that we're all kind of thinking the same thing. And yes, maybe a musical is surprising, but the directions that we take things, although our execution may be surprising, we hope, they're kind of the things we sort of want to see that we bet you kind of want to see too. Hmm. That's why I don't think people were like, huh, Scotty? They were like, ooh, Scotty, right? You know, I mean, and that's because we're all sort of imagining the same stuff and we're just trying to figure out how it appears.
I like it.
How does the conversation go with an actor? You're now portraying one of the most iconic characters of television of all time. Can't talk about it for a year.
I mean, We try to be as nice as we possibly can.
That's fair. That's nice.
You know, they understand what the deal is. We're lucky to have them all. So, yeah. And no one knows quite how long these things take, and they sometimes take a little longer than they maybe should.
Speaking of something like that, Henry Jordan Canning, we talked to her, the director of episode 5, Charades. She told us that your tone meeting for the episode was like a 3-hour meeting at the depth of which she has never seen for a tone meeting, and loved it. She thoroughly enjoyed it. She said she had 10 pages of notes by the end of that meeting. Is that the level of detail you're typical you typically practice, or do you give Strange New Worlds a little extra love for your tone meetings?
No, that's about, I mean, they vary. I mean, I co-wrote that episode with Kat, and so part of that was, that one was so specific because it's a comedy. And oh my God, Jordan Canning is an incredible director. I mean, it was more about, let's talk about what we want to be funny, but let's also hear what you want to be funny and let's talk about it. I mean, like, she really nailed that one. I want to say very, there are other shows I've been on where not my doing, they will go, 5 or 6 hours. There are ones that I've been on where they'll go 1 hour. I usually go for two. That's usually where I try to land. Because the goal in a tone meeting is to walk through the intent of the script with the director, say, this is what we were hoping would happen, this is what we want, but also to hear what they are thinking and how they want to approach it. And you know, my favorite part of the tone meeting, the part that is the best, is at the very end, and I say, and now it is yours. Like, have fun with it, make it your movie. Like, go do it. And I try really hard not to worry about it after that. It's okay. All gone. The intent is really just to tell them what we were going for, how we hope it works. And if they have a different idea, to have a discussion about it. And sometimes that requires, you know, like, there'll be a rewrite thing that we were like, oh, you're going to do that? That's great. Here, why don't we switch this around? And so that's really what it was. I think that one was complicated because she had so many specific emotional details that had to happen in the show. And she really, like, I mean, that is a tough episode to make work well. And she just nailed it. And I was grateful. So.
And I would add to that, you know, typically the show teaches you how to make the show, but not really ours, because it's genre jumping, right? All the things we've been talking about are delightful. So we look to match our directors with the tone of the particular episode. But then there are certain things, like Henry with 5 or me with Valerie Weiss in episode 2, where you kind of just like get in there and work closely with the director in order to sort of say, this could be this or that, right? Because, you know, Henry, that's a comedy of manners that Henry is doing, right? Or that's it's a full-on legal thriller that we're doing in 2, right? Mm-hmm. So I have some experience with that thing back from the Grisham days. Henry's got some experience, you know, with you know, so we go in and we are like, if you look at that, you could do it a bunch of different ways. Here's kind of what really we're thinking. The writer was thinking this, or in episode 2, Dana wrote it and she did a great job. And so I'm in there helping guide the director, and as is Dana, sort of, so we can sort of really narrow in the focus. Henry wrote 5, co-wrote 5, so easier for him also, right, to be in there guiding the director to sort of find the tone that we imagine fits into the tones of the season. Because there's still some variety that typically you would, so there's variation that typically in another show, you would just look at the past 2 episodes and you go, that's what they mean when Joey says whatever Joey says to leave the apartment, right? But in our case, Joey could say it differently in different episodes. Joey, right? That was the Matt.
Yep.
You got it.
See, I swung. You don't know I didn't.
Nope. That sums it up.
Excellent.
What did Joey say? Did he say anything?
How you doing? That's what he'd always say. He'd always say, how you doing?
Yeah. All right. Here's our next caller, Patrick, from the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Hi, Open Pike. This is Patrick calling in. First, I wanted to thank you for a really great season of coverage of Strange New Worlds. I can't wait for the show and can't wait for your coverage of the show whenever that season comes through. But in the meantime, I do have a question for your eminent guests. And that is, people have observed, me being among those people, that the pacing of Strange New Worlds is somewhat similar to Deep Space Nine, in that it's nominally episodic, but that it has these sort of more lengthy arcs that can be season-long arcs, series-long arcs, a lot of character building, and honestly, even some directorial and sound cue things that are very similar to Deep Space Nine. I wanted to know, was that on purpose, or is that sort of just a natural evolution when you're trying to make a modern but more episodic show? Thanks so much.
Definitely not on purpose. I remember I was in high school, and Samuel R. Delaney, who was a great science fiction writer, he knew the teacher of our journalism course at St. Anne's, Brooklyn Heights. So Samuel R. Delaney came in, and I had found these two passages in two of his books that were the same. And I was like, and they're the same. He's like, whatever, kid. No, I mean, we set out to make something that was episodic, but with serialized character arcs, because we had done both in our lives. And we were like, this is probably the sweet spot for Star Trek. Like, Jim Kirk probably really didn't want to just jump right back on the horse after Edith Keeler died. He probably would have liked a minute or two to be sad, or an episode or two, but they weren't afforded that. And you know, what we learned from Pike and Disco early days is, in a season-long serialized object, the first three episodes or so are act one. And in act one, everything goes to shit. Hmm. Because that's how you make an object that is serialized and long, right? Everything's got to go bad so you can fix it at the end, or else there's no story. And people are like, your show's really dark. And we're like, no, just wait, it gets light. But so that wasn't worked. So this became sort of like a happy medium that we did on purpose. And any resemblances to Deep Space Nine are flattering, but not intentional.
I mean, TNG is also would do this. There was a classic Trek thing that they did in those, all those series, and to a certain extent, the original series, where they would lean into, oh, we're going to tell a story about Data today. You know what I mean? And like, that was the story. And so we really want, that is something that we, I want to say, intentionally borrowed and tried to use. I mean, I love Deep Space Nine. I had actually, we were in the middle of the pandemic, and I was working out of my office at home, and you know, you couldn't go out in the world and do anything. And I just sat and rewatched all of Deep Space Nine with my sons during season one. Unrelated, it was just helpful to kind of go back to it, because like it was sort of like, what did those shows from the 80s and 90s do really well that we liked? I think there is some crossover. It wasn't, we weren't copying or ripping, or we were hoping to borrow and respect.
And to Henry's point, one thing that we do, which is really Next Gen, which is unlike Disco, where they'll try to service all the characters in every episode, we don't. We definitely have a character that we push to the fore, you know, in order to sort of, so our notion is less time, but deeper time is the relationships we're building with the characters, which is not better or worse than more time but less deep. That is sort of more the ensemble model. We're less an ensemble show in presentation from week to week, and more an ensemble show when you look at us over the course of the whole season.
Yeah, we got 10 movies, but we don't know what the actors are going to do in every movie.
I like it. We do have one more caller, and it's our good friend Abby from the First Flight Podcast.
Hey, Open Pike and Akiva and Henry. So I know you're going to get a lot of Star Trek questions, but I always wonder about creative people, some other things as well. So I am wondering if you could each tell us three books that you have read that you think everybody should read and why. Now, I am a children's literacy teacher, so kids' books, 100% fine. But what do you remember reading that was inspiring, and why do you think it would help the world if more people read it? So great work, all of you. Hope you and yours are all well. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, I have so many books that I'm like, what book? Is it something recent, or is it like in your life?
In your life. That is, yeah, she's definitely asking in your life. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was a big one when I was a young man. That was huge. I don't know if it holds up as well, but boy, is it great in its own way. The Fifth Season by N.K. Jemisin. That's a really, really brilliant retake on science fiction in a way that like rethinks it in a way that I hadn't seen before. And it's beautifully written.
I have that book on my nightstand because Onitra suggested it. I haven't got to it yet, but
I suggested to her. She suggested some good stuff to me as well, so I'm not taking credit, but that book's great. Really, 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 really worth reading. I'm trying to think about importance of when I was younger that really made my... I read a lot of science fiction and a lot of fantasy, so that's like where my head ends up going. I mean, I was going to say Foundation because that's an easy one. I guess I will just say that because it's right there. I mean, you know, is that a
book? Yeah.
I mean, I always say Lord of the Rings, which is also just like
that was the other one I was going to say because I read that with my.
But it's true.
I read that with my kid. I mean, this is the original edition of Lord of the Rings that I read. It's like ancient. You know, I can't believe I still have it. That's affected. That certainly affected how I looked at the world.
And the minor all science fiction also, interestingly enough, they were A Wrinkle in Time. It was read to me when I was quite wee. It meant a lot to me. Ray Bradbury, Something Wicked This Way Comes. And then probably Stranger in a Strange Land, probably wildly dated now, almost unreadable in terms of its politics. But the ideas were really compelling. There's also another Heinlein book called Red Planet, which was sort of Heinlein wrote sort of for young readers. And weirdly, I read that and the Andromeda Strain sort of early enough to have them feel like I was reading them young. And I'm a failed fiction writer, so my whole life was shaped by books until I realized I was not talented enough to write them. And then I allowed myself to be shaped by movies because I could get away with those.
Oh, those are great choices. Yeah.
That's a good way to fail.
Yeah.
Failed your way right to an Academy Award.
Yeah.
So I do have one more Star Trek question. Henry, the last time you were here, you spoke with us about how you and Akiva have a lot of say, if not all the say, in the music in the show. And so I would love to know who picked Anything Goes as the song that Uhura sends into the subspace rift.
Oh, that, I mean, that, those were our writers. I think it was Dana and Bill. And it was more about what could we clear that's actually good. Did a good version of it. They had picked it. We had found some selections of it. We found a good one. It was about cost, but they chose it.
Very cool.
I'll have to ask them if it was the Temple of Doom reference then.
There we go.
That's another one that really affected my youth and probably doesn't hold up quite as well in terms of...
Yeah, but I still love it.
It's
one of those movies you watch as a kid.
That opening sequence is so great.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic way to start a film.
Yeah,
my wife learned that song in Mandarin as a Valentine's present to me one year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. All right. Well, Akiva and Henry, I mean, I know there's a lot of variables, but best guess, what's a window for this maybe not season 3 look like, knowing what the production schedule is like?
Here's what you need to know. We're in a righteous strike.
Mm-hmm.
The righteous strike is over. The business will get back to business.
Once it's over, do you have an idea of how long it might take?
I think those are hard questions.
I know.
They're not based on things that we actually have control over. So.
Sure. Okay.
I mean, Henry does, but he won't.
So much control. So much control.
We'll send a Gorn over to hack
utterly
his computer.
Pointless.
It'll be fine.
Yeah. We will continue to include links to the Entertainment Community Fund in our show notes because we have always stood in solidarity with both the striking writers and the striking actors here at Open Pike Night. So that's something that we can proudly say that we haven't wavered on. We support the people that make the things that we love, and we know that without you guys, it's not going to happen.
So, thank you.
Yeah. So, Henry and Akiva, Open Pike Night is an open mic night themed podcast, and therefore, we asked all of our guests to tell us a joke. Do you guys have jokes prepared for us today?
I don't have a good one right now.
We didn't say a good joke.
Yeah, we didn't say a good joke. We didn't say the best joke.
Let me look back at what someone sent me. No, can't repeat. I can't repeat that. I'll just repeat the one from my son.
Excellent.
Which was, why could the pilot not fly the plane, which he asked me. And I said, why? And he said, because he's a bear. I was delighted by that.
It's still funny. It's still it's still a good joke.
He's trying to figure out how jokes worked.
I made one up before the today. I made it up today because I felt like it was supposed to be a Star Trek joke.
Ooh.
What did Captain Kirk say when the grain storage opened on his head?
No idea.
I have an idea, but I'll
I'm in triple.
Oh, okay.
Love it.
I was going to say, Silo! Oh, nice.
See, Henry, you get it, because tribbles are in the...
It's good. It works on me.
That's how all your writing sessions go.
Henry, next, can I do a comedy?
Yeah, of course. Are you kidding? You say this like you're not funny. You're fucking hilarious, dude.
It was a delight, both of you. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you guys. Thank you very much.
We really appreciate your time, and we appreciate how tough a spot you are in, especially with everything going on and everybody hoping, and hopefully it's just a great sign to you that so many people are desperately waiting for season 3 whenever it comes.
We do appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you once again to Henry Alonzo Myers and Akiva Goldsman, showrunners for Star Trek Strange New Worlds, for hanging out with us. That was a great conversation.
Dude.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Like, one of the few words I can form right now is dudes. And I got to say thank you so much to our callers. You guys elicited some seriously good responses and some responses we did not expect to get at all. So thank you for continuing to stick by us through this very long hiatus. It does sound like they're pretty confident that season 3 is going to happen. So keep calling the AMPTP, keep donating to the Entertainment Community Fund, because as Akiva said, this is a righteous strike and striking works.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So again, our amazing callers helped make our show even better. And Jesse, how can folks find out when they need to call in and what they need to call in about?
Well, you can just go to openpike.com to get everything there is to get about us in one place. But if you want specifically to know when we have new guests coming on and what we'd like to hear for those guests, go sign up at openpike.substack.com for our free newsletter. It's called the Open Pike Night Crew Manifest, that goes directly for free into the email inbox of your choice, and you will know before anyone else what it is that we need and who's coming up next.
Speaking of which, we'll give you a tease on who's coming up next. Interview with Bernadette Peters, costume designer extraordinaire.
Bernadette Croft.
God damn it, I knew it.
I'm leaving that in.
No, I paused so you could correct me if I was wrong. Bernadette Croft, costumer extraordinaire. And very excited, patrons at a $10 level or up, so keep that in mind, will be able to join us for a live watch along of a film or show that inspired Davy Perez's Under the Cloak of War with Davy Perez. We don't know exactly what film yet. We're deciding on it. It's going to be a good one regardless. We've got some very good options he gave us. So patrons are going to be able to join that and ask questions in the chat while we discuss the film while watching it. And then we're going to release that as an episode later that you can play while you also watch the film.
Yes, anyone will be able to play the podcast version of that episode. We don't paywall content permanently because we just don't believe in it.
Yep. And so be sure to follow Open Pike Night. Be sure to go sign up for the Patreon if you want to hear more. If you've liked what we've done with writers and the extra in-depth information you've gotten from Strange New Worlds, go ahead and sign up on Patreon and support us. You get a chance to hang out with Davy Perez. And man, yeah, the list of films and shows that he sent us that influenced Under the Cloak of War, Episode 8, it's a great list. And I can't wait to choose what we're going to watch along with him. Follow us anywhere you can. We are at Open Pike on almost every social media platform there is. The content is there. The links are there. All the information about Open Pike. And go check out any back interviews or episodes you haven't had a chance to listen to. We are going to keep making content in this indeterminate amount of time we have until season 3. Open Pike Night will be here for you.
And we just hit 50 episodes, so there's some substantial time for you to spend with us if you would like to. And let me just be the first to say, RIP Prime Lorca.
Seriously. I mean, I was hoping he'd come back and he wouldn't have even had any idea, like he deserted or something. Yeah. He's like, wait, what happened while I was gone? Just saying, there's a detritus pile, but that doesn't mean they put that pile in the garbage can. If we get seven or eight seasons of Strange New Worlds. I
mean, they did say they put that in the garbage can, but we know that they're very cagey and that they have to be very careful with what they say. So,
and they're going
to
keep asking for more episodes.
Yes. So. Hope springs
eternal. Let's get a hashtag going
for that.
That
was great.
Hashtag more Strange New Worlds.
Yeah.
More episodes.
Yeah, what hashtag is
we'll figure out the clever
hashtag. I mean, I was saying I want 13 and like he was saying he wants 20. It's like, okay, I'm not going to.
You don't tell those guys no really. No.
Or just.
Well, apparently Paramount does.
10 2-hour episodes. So you could do that too. Still counts. Mm-hmm. All right, Cam, when you're not on the Open Pike Night stage, where can folks find you?
You can find me on my other podcast where John and I, along with our other co-hosts, are discussing Star Trek The Next Generation. I'm watching it for the very first time, and we've even gotten to the point where now we're watching DS9 for the very first time. So I'm excited to be into those, and come join us, Greenshirt, a newbie's trek through The Next Generation, and at Greenshirt87 on Twitter.
And Jesse, where can folks find you when you're not hanging out here?
If I'm not hanging out here, I'm probably on those social media that you mentioned, at Open Pike. But if for whatever reason you need a little bit more of me in your ears, just stay in this podcasting app and look up Sudden But Inevitable. The name has probably tipped you off that started out as a Firefly show, and it evolved into a show where I just share single season television shows that were canceled before their time with people who've never seen them before. So if you like to hear people get forced to like stuff, check out Sudden But Inevitable.
All right. It's been a long night, and the Open Pike Night crew has to go find out if there's a season 3. I don't know. Couldn't quite get Akiva to confirm it, but we're pretty sure there's going to be a season 3. So be sure to clean up after yourselves. Be sure to tape your servers. You can go anywhere you want, but you can't stay here.